The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The Euros begin. Italy swapped Turkey aside with ease, running the game from start to finish. Insigne and Spinazzola shine while Ciro Immobile gets his first goal in a tournament. But they weren't up against much. What's the opposite of dark horses? Light cows? That's what Turkey are this evening, stinking the place out, not even bothering to play until after half-time. Why can't Croatia be like that? There's Bocelli, Nessun Dorma, U2, a ball delivered by a tiny car, some fans, Mancini in a lovely suit, some montage is pretty much all you need. Also today we'll look ahead to tomorrow's games as the Welsh begin their Baku adventure. You've asked lots of questions, but look, we're doing this every day, so we'll try and keep them relatively short. That's today's Guardian Football Weekly Daily. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hi, Max. How are you doing?
I'm very well. I very much enjoyed the live show with you yesterday, including you telling me an anecdote I'd never heard from you, which...
Has it made you change your opinion of me in any way, Max?
Oh, in no way am I surprised that it happened to you. For those who weren't there, it was a tube train.
I think, Max, that what goes on the live show should stay on the live show.
I think you're absolutely right. Nicky Bandini, congratulations on your win. I thought you played superbly tonight. How are you?
I thought I played superbly as well. I deserve a lot of the credit.
I think you really do. Ed Ahrens, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. And live from the Stadio Olimpico, Johnny Liu. Hello, mate.
Hi, how's it going?
Very good. We can see you're in seat 37, your mask on, your lanyard on. We know you've got to write something or do something for the paper, but so we won't keep you for too long. But tell us how the atmosphere was.
Brilliant. Like, absolutely. You know, I think I've really missed tournament football. I think a lot of us have really missed tournament football more than we were expecting. And there was something really quite moving and cathartic about national anthems and fans in the stadium, even if it's only about 16,000. Bocelli singing Nessun Dorma and you know, kind of ridiculous opening ceremony, which is sort of a, you know, a prerequisite to any tournament. It was a really nice homecoming, I thought, for something that we've missed a lot more than we thought we did.
How were the fans?
Yeah, I mean, noisy. I mean, they filled the stadium pretty well. A really good amount of Turkish fans who I imagine are kind of diaspora Turkish fans, because a lot of them have sort of brought flags from like the Italian towns they were from. So there was a really good mix of in the stadium, and quite tense, I think, in the first half. Towards the end of the first half, getting slightly frustrated at all the kind of potential penalty appeals. And you sort of wondered at half-time whether it was going to be one of those that kind of just slipped away from Italy, whether they've thrown everything at Turkey in the first half and the fans were going to get on their back. But it was really quite impressive how Italy managed that game and managed the situation. And that second-half performance was a real, real statement from them.
Before we go into analysing the game, I mean, Nessun Dorma is so... For anyone sort of my age or around our age, you know, just... It is such a great football song. Even just watching on the telly, I got slightly moved by it and sort of wished it was 1990 again and I was 11. How was it in the ground?
Yeah, it was really good. I wanted to sing along. It's one of those where you want to sing along, especially the last bit, like the Vincero bit. But you feel like your singing quality is so... It's not like a rock concert. It's so far off what is being provided for you live that it almost feels kind of sacrilegious to sing along Vincero. But I wasn't at Leicester in 2016, but I imagine that's kind of how it felt like. That's proper tournament now,
Johnny. That was followed by Bono, the Prime Minister of Ireland, and The Edge and Martin Garrix, a Dutch DJ, I believe. I had to look that up. He's into Progressive House, Big Room House and Future Bass, for anyone who may not know. That was a virtually recorded performance. How was it presented in the stadium?
Just on the screens. There's a screen at either end of the stadium, and it was the same at the Champions League final with can't remember who it was now, that woman. And
Dua Lipa?
No, Dua Lipa was Kiev.
Right.
God, I can't remember.
God, we're so old.
Selena Gomez? Gosh. Anyway, yeah, it was literally just
Bucks
shown on
Fizz?
The...
Was it Bucks Fizz?
Yeah, and that was it, really. It was filmed in London, I think. They actually filmed it in a studio in London and just a little light show, some fireworks and smoke and it was like they weren't here.
Let's talk about the game then. Italy 24 shots to Turkey's 1. They were so superior, Nikki. I mean, they weren't up against much, but did they do what you expected them to do?
Yeah, I've just tweeted this and I think it's the best way I can explain how I feel right now. I feel a bit like, you know, when you've sort of had a band that you've been obsessed with that no one had heard of and then they go mainstream and suddenly it's like, oh, everyone's actually seeing what I'm talking about. Because this Italy team, it's not just that they're a good Italy team, which I think they are. I think this is a genuinely good team. But they're fun. And they're a team who score that goal and don't do what I think anyone who doesn't pay attention to Italy might imagine they do and go, right, that's done, shut up shop. They're a team that keeps coming forward, keeps trying to press the advantage, kind of only almost knows how to play on the front foot and does it with so many players in that group who I think have natural verve. Insigne is a player who has natural flair to the way he plays. I found him very frustrating in parts of this game, but he's still someone who has that sense of joy to how he plays. I think you've got that from Barella. I think you've got that from even Spinazzola coming forward from left back, who is someone who started out his career as a winger, but now is playing at left back and still has that drive in him to come forward. The whole team plays with this instinct to go forward, and that's partly to do with the players, but it's much more to do with Mancini and the attitude that he has taken in terms of both the tactics and the sort of strategic approach, I guess, but also the way he's built this squad, the fact that he went out of his way to include as many players as possible to make it this big, inclusive, positive experience, which, yes, has Chiellini and Bonucci, but also has a real bedrock of young players in that squad, even if they're not in the first 11, who are part of it. And I think it's hard to explain if you didn't go through the emotional low that Italy went through with the last World Cup, with Ventura, with failing to qualify. I think even, you know, England have failed to qualify for World Cups before, so maybe there's some understanding. But for Italy, after 6 decades to not make that World Cup, it really felt like the world ended. And it ended in such a dismal way, because Ventura's Italy were the opposite of this. You went to watch them dreading the 90 minutes you were going to spend watching them trying not to lose. To have 5 years later, which is a long wait, this Italy step onto the world scene, as I guess, the first time that people are looking at them outside of Italy, and produce a performance like this. It's thrilling. It's uplifting. It's wonderful.
It was great to see you celebrating with your dog. We watched it on Zoom, cheering there. Ed, I mean, I don't know who shone for you. I thought Insigne was brilliant for Italy tonight. Who did you pick out?
Yeah, he was superb. I thought Jorginho was really superb as well, kind of pulling the strings in midfield, especially in the second half when Turkey just kind of wilted. You mentioned their only chance, and I happened to miss that because I went to the toilet. And then when I came back, I think the first goal was immediately after that, wasn't it? And then, you know, Turkey just completely fell apart. But yeah, Insigne was very impressive. He kind of reminds me a bit of a Iron Robin, you know, but on, you know, with the right foot, cutting, kind of does the same thing all the time, but very effectively. And obviously, finally got the goal that he'd kind of been looking for all night with a great finish. And yeah, I thought Spinazzola, the left back, was superb, absolutely superb. I don't think I'd seen him play before, to be honest, and really gave them great balance down the wings. Which I think in the first half they were trying to go through the middle a little bit too much, and then they just started moving the ball very quickly and were really, really good. And yeah, Turkey just wilted really, surprisingly, because, you know, I think they only conceded 3 goals in the whole of qualifying, and then to, you know, concede 3 on the opening night was a bit of a disaster for them.
I liked Paul Hayward's tweet. Leonardo Spinazzola, the outstanding wide attacker in this game, must be looking forward to Jose Mourinho's arrival at Roma. Barry, I mean, Turkey were really. I mean, Simon said, are Turkey the worst dark horses ever? I think you predicted Turkey to do well. You weren't the only one, but a lot of people tweeting us to say that's a great prediction from Barry. Magic Sponges, actual turkeys would have been better than this, JD. The remote control car had more possession than Turkey. I mean, they weren't very good, were they?
God, I've got to find it hard to top any of those. I mean, they are the desert orchid of dark horses on the strength of that performance. I was hugely disappointed. I expected an awful lot more from them. I don't expect much from them now on the strength of that. I suppose they're going to have to play now after losing that so heavily. But their approach seems so negative. By the hour mark, I think they'd changed all three of their centre midfield or their midfield. Those guys were just shattered. They were overrun on the flanks. They were overrun in the middle. I think they mustered sort of two half-decent chances in the entire game. And, it was very disappointing. I suppose you could praise the manner in which they defended in the first half, but, you know, that is very faint praise.
Johnny, did you expect more from them?
Yeah, I did. I mean, you know, like Ed said, you know, this is a really tight defence. I think they beat France in qualifying. They weren't fancied for no reason. I mean, they just didn't turn up here. And you know, it's not too late for them to turn it around. But what happened, I think, was more Italy just grinding them down. I mean, you Turkey started all right. And after about 20 minutes, they started making chances. And you could see Turkey, the only way they could stop Italy getting through them was just to huddle around the edge of their 18, but basically to pack the area with bodies. And then you could see this sort of 35, 40-yard gap opening up between basically the back 10 and Yilmaz up front. And they couldn't really get out from that. I mean, the midfield looked shattered by about an hour. And, they were kind of knocked off their game plan. It was a real object lesson in how to break down what you think is a tough defensive team, because you have to be patient and you kind of have to work them around the pitch and tire them out, and that's what Italy did so well.
They kind of reminded me of Newcastle when they used to sit back and defend, and Joe Ellington was isolated on his own up front and they couldn't get the ball to him. That was the way it was with Yilmaz and Turkey.
Just what do Turkey fans want? They expect to come in the top four, don't they? Anyway, there was an interesting moment, Nicky, with there were sort of lots of half-hearted handball appeals in the first half, but there was one you went up for, which to me looked absolutely nothing like a handball, but you explained why you went up for it.
Yeah, and look, the handball rule has, well, the interpretation of it has changed. There is fresh guidance from IFAB that has been introduced for the coming season, but ahead of this tournament. So this was all things that has been in the public domain. But that last handball, it's now gone straight out of my head which Turkey player it was, whose arm it struck, was the one right before halftime, about the 41st minute, but I can't think of who it was. But it was a close-range cross from Spinazzola that hit his arm. The arm was in front of him, and 100% in Italy, that would have been a penalty this season. It would have been a penalty this season. It would have been a penalty last season. So the reaction of all of the Italian players on the pitch, I very much understood, because they are used to that being a penalty in the league they play in. Again, this guidance has come down from IFAB, so we expect this to change in the season ahead. There's two main elements to the IFAB guidance. One relates to if there's an accidental handball in the build-up to a goal, they are now expected to not award that as a handball. But equally, these situations where you can see the movement isn't deliberate by a defender like that, when you can see the movement is to do with the natural running motion, there has been some sort of nuance added to how referees interpret that. So I understand why it wasn't given.
Expected position is going to be the most sort of painful. It's going to happen at some point when there's expected and unexpected. I'm looking forward to those moments. there was one moment, Ed, where Bonucci and Chiellini just, I mean, they'll be playing forever, won't they? I saw Barney Ronay tweeting the other day that he feels like Ross Taylor has played in every cricket match he's watched for the last 20 years. I feel the same about every, you know, European football match with Bonucci and Chiellini. There was one moment where Chiellini made a sort of tackle at the end and it didn't matter because Italy were going to win anyway, but they sort of celebrated together. They are such great warriors, aren't they?
They are, and you know, he almost scored, didn't he, in the first half? Or was it
a good
save? And then there was one point in the first half as well when, yeah, like I think it was Johnny said that they were packing around the area, and Chiellini somehow found himself in the left back position advancing, and was about to cross it, and then was like, oh no, what do I do? And then fell over, and it was I think it would be, you know, obviously with those two there, they're going to have a good chance of keeping quite a few clean sheets. I mean, obviously, I don't think they're the oldest centre-back pairing. I heard the pod the other day, you were talking about Pepe and Jose Font. But they're not too far behind that, are they? But, you know, that's something that England could obviously do with a bit of experience at the back.
Some of the Italian media were having fun with the fact that Demiral, who's at Juventus with Chiellini and Bonucci, there were times this season when there was quite sort of strong calls that Demiral is now ahead of Chiellini and everyone needs to put him in the bin. So there were some Italians having fun with the idea that still, despite the fact there's fewer Juventus players in the Italy team than there have been in some past editions, still a Juventus player who opened the scoring for Italy at Euro 2020.
Bonucci and Chiellini, they remind me of a pair of nightclub bouncers, but they'd be very bad for business because if they were on the door, nobody would ever get in.
there'd be a woman in a power suit with
no
a
trainers
board behind them.
Yeah,
no trainers. I remember.
I don't like that shirt.
Once, the only time I ever went to China Whites to with a Liam Lawrence for some reason, and I think one of the Keos was in there, but I don't know which one. They weren't.
Name dropping, Max.
It's pretty high end name dropping, isn't it? Liam Lawrence is if that's a name drop, I'm in trouble. Now, Johnny. Most importantly, how tiny did the tiny car look that delivered the ball to the referee from where you were sitting?
It was so tiny that I didn't notice it until I saw it on Twitter. I was eating a salad, and because you know there was obviously you can't hear it from up here, and you know it was just a little thing that rolling out there, and now you know you can see it in it's parked in its little garage at the side of the pitch, where the little car sleeps at night. So yeah. I don't know whether it sleeps there all night. I don't know if they're going to wheel that same car out in the Wales game, or whether they now put it on a plane and they have to transport it to Budapest or Wembley, or I don't know. But it's a nice touch.
In the IPL, they deliver the match ball in a DHL box, but you know, a guy dressed as a DHL courier, or maybe he is a DHL courier, delivers the match ball. And in a previous Olympics as well, I remember, they had a little truck that used to collect the javelins and the shot puts.
Yes.
I think Rio had one.
That was super fun. Sorry, Ed.
I was going to say, it'd be good if somebody had to drive it immediately after the match, drive it to the next venue with the ball on the back and then deliver it to the stadium.
It's a bit of a mean joke, but there were definitely, again, memes in Italy because the national anthems when they were being sung, Insigne was the end of the line next to Bonucci, and Insigne is not a tall man, so when you put him next to a centre back he looks especially not tall. And then there was some memes involving Insigne and driving off in the car.
Goal scorer challenge saying Insigne is 5'4", the same height as Amanda Holden and Mila Kunis. I did like George saying, does the little car make you want to buy the full-size car or just make you want a little car even more? It's sort of bad marketing that all everybody wants is now a tiny Volkswagen clown car to poodle about in. Yes, David, what other gimmicks should be used to bring the ball onto the pitch? A trained falcon? A cannon shot from the top of the stand? A parachutist? Look, we'll find out. Richard Jolly's stat of the game. This is the first Italy squad for a major tournament without any of Buffon, Maldini, Tardelli or Gianni Rivera since the 1954 World Cup. BW says, if Barry was Italian, what would he be called? I'm going to guess at Benito Glennini.
I'll take that.
And finally, is Nicky much of a cook? If so, is her sugo better than her mum or nonna's sugo?
Well, my mum's actually English. My dad's Italian.
Oh,
but
that's right.
My mum's a pretty good cook. Okay. I do my best.
Johnny, before we let you go, how is Rome? How is all the sort of protocol and all that kind of stuff?
It was really smooth. I mean, I don't know if you heard, but a lot of journalists have been getting snarled up in the accreditation process at Wembley, trying to collect their accreditation. Like my friend Jack Pitt-Brook was there for 5 hours. Yes, he had to go back on the second day for having the temerity to have a middle name. And if the name on your application form doesn't tally up with the name on your passport, then basically the system goes into meltdown. And I came here, I got to the ground 3 hours in advance, hoping, you know, fully expecting to get the same treatment. And they held my passport up next to my accreditation. And then the girl sort of showed it to her superior. And the guy made a noise that was just like, bleh. And then waved his arm, and that was it. I mean, people talk about Italian bureaucracy, and I was expecting a lot of it, but I think, in my experience, it's much more like the pretense of bureaucracy. So there were all these kind of stages to get through, but everyone just kind of waves you through, and it's been actually really, really terrific and good fun, and now, you know, looking forward to my 5 days of quarantine.
Oh, is that it? Are you not going to any more games? Are you flying back? What's the?
I'm flying back tomorrow, and then you can break quarantine to do games. So I'm doing England against Croatia. I think it's that's kind of up in the air at the moment. But apart from that, yeah, it's legal for me to get on the tube and get off at Wembley Park and go to England against Croatia, but not go for a walk.
All right, mate. Well, listen. Thanks for coming on, Johnny. Appreciate it.
No, cheers.
Take it easy, Johnny Liu. There, out in the Stadio Olimpico. Nikki, before we finish on this game, is there anything you wanted to add? Do you want to just glow in this, or are you worried that Italy have gone too early?
It's definitely such an unusual feeling. Italy, famously, Italy's best tournaments have often been when they've come in with quite a sour atmosphere around the camp, when they've come in and started tournaments slowly. It's definitely a strange feeling, but no, I'm really excited, and I told you guys before I was excited, and then somewhere around a day ago I started to panic a little bit because people started to ask me more specifically questions like, so are they going to beat Turkey? And I suddenly thought, well, what if they don't? So I'm really sort of happy that this team that, as I say, has been playing like this for ages. I think maybe that's the only other thing I'd want to sort of hammer home again. Everyone has sort of slowly woken up to the fact that, oh, Italy haven't lost in a while, right? Italy haven't lost since 2018. It's now 28 games unbeaten. But I think that people maybe hadn't realised until tonight that they'd done that playing attacking football. I think people might have just thought, oh, they're just sort of toddling on by and drawing 0-0 and winning 1-0, because people have that idea of Italy. And this is very much not an anomalous performance. This is how they've been playing. They play on the front foot. They try to keep scoring once they score, and they never seem to really sit back. So I think it's just really nice that they started the tournament, I guess, as they mean to go on.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll look ahead to tomorrow's games. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. And now voting is open for the Listener's Choice Award at the British Podcast Award. So a lot of you email us to tell us that, you know, we've really helped you in lockdown and you really like us. But now it's time for you to put your money where your mouth is. Right? Should I be this aggressive when I'm asking people to vote for us? Yeah, you know, we do all this for you. We don't get paid for this. We just do it out of the kindness of our hearts. And in return, and if we win the award, everyone will get a go with it. So we'll send it around in alphabetical order. Although I don't want to dissuade people whose names begin with Z. Yes, Ed?
I'd say I'd be first.
It would be. You get it. You absolutely would be first,
yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Third.
Are you ahead of Aardvark? You are.
Well, the Aardvarks.
Jeff Aardvark.
The Aardvarks, yeah.
Is that it?
I think we're third in the London phone book. The phone book still exists, oh. I don't know.
I don't know. That's exciting. Yeah. So you get it second after the Aardvark family.
Yeah, and the Aaron. If there's any Aarons around, you know, without the S,
oh,
so obviously
okay.
They go ahead.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm. So anyway,
yeah, sorry.
Just so Ed can get his hands on the... No, not at all. It's an important point. go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Then you have to type in Football Weekly and me and Barry's little face will appear. When it appears, click on the face. And then I think you just have to enter your email address to prove that you're a legitimate human.
You're making it worry, sound far more complicated a process than it actually is.
Well, what I'm thinking is while people are listening to us talk through the process, they could do it, of course, unless they're driving, because we know how many car crashes the pod causes. So if you are listening right now on at home and you're on your laptop, do it right now, please. And if we win, we'll talk about it a lot. If we don't, we'll never mention it again. BritishPodcastAwards.com/vote. Now, Group A then, most people listening, certainly in the UK, will be listening on Saturday morning. So these games taking place today for you. 2 o'clock kickoff, Wales versus Switzerland. Eight members of Wales squad from the last Euros. It's quite a lot, really. Bale, Ramsey, Joe Allen and co. Aaron Ramsey fit again and will play. Nicky, Juventus haven't seen a lot of him, have they really?
No, well, I find this game on both sides sort of fascinating for that, because both teams are sort of, at least theoretically, at least notionally, quite reliant on star players who haven't really been very involved for a while. Ramsey had a pretty disastrous season at Juventus. There were a couple of bright moments at the beginning, but then he just very much sort of dropped out of the team, didn't really have a natural place, and when he did play, was often injured and rarely looked like he had a spot within, and I'll say lots of players might have looked like this because Pirlo's system never really came together, but he often looked like he didn't have a home in Pirlo's system. So you've got that situation. You've got Gareth Bale, who we know didn't play that much at Tottenham, a bit more towards the end, on the Wales side, and then on the Switzerland side, you have Jerdan Shaqiri, who's barely played all season as well, who's also sort of, in theory, the creative hub of the whole team. So both teams have these stars who haven't really been doing it for their club sides recently. And in some degree, I almost think that could be a double-edged sword, because if nothing else, in a tournament when everyone else has been playing football for 15 months straight, it feels like, at least they'll be fairly fresh.
Ed, a lot of people are writing off Wales' chances. I've seen most people saying that, you know, that they'll do well to get out of this group. It's slightly different now we've seen how rubbish Turkey are. I mean, they could obviously be a lot better the next time, but that's got to give the Welsh hope.
Yeah, I think it does give them some hope, because obviously, and the goal difference could be very important in the group, and 3-0 is, you know, from Turkey's point of view, is not the great, it's a great start. But I think Wales, yeah, I think this is the key game for them, obviously, and everybody says the first game, but really, if they can at least, I think, avoid defeat, actually. I don't think they necessarily have to win it. Just get, you know, not lose it, then they'll give themselves an opportunity. But the one thing to say about Turkey, I think, in the next game, it's going to be in Baku, and there's going to be a lot of Turkish fans there. So I think it's going to be very tough for Wales. And obviously, Turkey are going to be severely criticised at home, and they're going to... you'd expect some kind of reaction after that game. But yeah, I mean, I think if Wales go into the game, you know, it's going to the tournament with nothing to lose, then who knows? There's every chance they could get through the group. But I think, you know, the game against Italy is not going to be an easy one, obviously. I can imagine backs to the wall for the whole 90 minutes in that game.
I'm fascinated by the psychology of this now, because at half time, when this game was still 0-0 tonight, I saw lots of people tweeting things like, oh, this is one of the side effects of the 2014 tournament and third place teams being able to get through, is you invite this performance from Turkey, who think, well, if we can just get a draw tonight, then that's a strong position to start the group. But now, having seen Turkey get walloped, how does that affect Wales and Switzerland, who I think already were both, to some extent, looking at this game as, this would be a really great game to win, because then we don't need to do much more against those theoretically tougher teams to get through the group. So I'm just really fascinated by how, I think almost even more so because they've had now like a night to reflect on it. They'll see this result, they'll go to bed and think about it, and how they then approach their game is a sort of subplot, I think.
There was quite a nice moment there, Barry, a couple of minutes ago, where you just leant back and put your fist on your chin and just closed your eyes for 1 second. I thought you'd actually fallen asleep on day one.
It's been a long season, Max. Concertina'd out. We've all got a bit of fatigue. I suppose the pragmatic approach is the best, but I see no reason why Wales shouldn't go for this and try and win this game. They've got some fine players. They've a lot of imponderables, much like England. You know, will Page play a back three or four? Has Danny Ward done enough to in the friendlies to displace Wayne Hennessy as goalkeeper? There's talk of Aaron Ramsey possibly playing as a false nine. I personally would go with Kiefer Moore, and I think that's the opinion most Welsh fans share. I think it's certainly the opinion Ellis James shares, and he's the only Welsh... Well, he's one of very few Welsh fans I know. But and the fitness of Ben Davies is a problem as well, or is an issue, I think. So and then if will Caballo start ahead of Ampadu, I don't know. But there, a lot of them are nice problems to have. And then in Gareth Bale, of course, they have the world's proudest Welshman. And he's, you know, while he didn't play a great deal this season, he showed signs that he's, you know, he'll do fine in this tournament.
Yeah, so that's Wales against Switzerland. And then we've got Group B as well. 5 o'clock, Denmark, Finland. 8 o'clock, UK time, Belgium, Russia. Ed, a lot of people are saying the Danes are the dark horses. Are they Turkish dark horses or are they Danish dark horses?
Well, I think they've... Yeah, I think a lot of people are saying that with good reason, because they've had some great results in the run-up to this, you know, including beating England at Wembley not so long ago. And they're a very experienced team. They've been together for a long time. Obviously know each other's how to play together, and very solid at the back as well. I think most people expect them to get through that group. But Finland, I don't really know much about Finland. It's going to be interesting to see. Obviously their first major tournament. They're really going to be up for it. But I think, you know, Denmark have got a lot of experience and could go under the radar. I've actually got some friends in Denmark who are telling me that it could be 1992 all over again. But I'm not sure who the John Jensen is of this current Denmark.
Oh, that's Højbjerg, isn't it? I mean, all day long.
True. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Højbjerg, midfielder, yeah. Who never scores a goal.
Has he ever scored?
Yeah, he scored one this season, I think, or something. I'm not sure. Teemu Pukki should be fit after playing half an hour of Finland's last friendly. Most analysis has been Teemu Pukki based from the UK. Yes, Barry.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, if you look at the Danish squad, there's lots of names we in Blighty are familiar with: Kasper Schmeichel, Christian Eriksen, Pierre Emil Højbjerg, Martin Braithwaite, Andreas Christensen, Thomas Delaney, who should clearly be playing for Ireland. Then I looked through the Finland squad, and the names that jumped out at me were Teemu Pukki, Glenn Kamara. Didn't really jump, but kind of just, you know, stuck his head above the parapet. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Jura Toivio or Tim Sparv. They're other names that caught my eye for no particular reason. But yeah, my ignorance of the Finland national team is almost total. But I'm looking forward to seeing them. It's a big night for them. It's their first ever game at a major tournament. I presume they have some sort of rivalry going on with Denmark. But unfortunately for them, they're at home. And while I would love to see them spring a surprise, I suspect they won't.
We will all learn about the Finns together. Belgium, Russia, 8 o'clock kickoff. De Bruyne is out of the first one because of that facial injury he picked up when Antonio Rudiger ran into his head. Not clear yet whether Eden Hazard will start after having been a substitute in both of Belgium's warm-up friendlies. Artem Dzyuba, who the big Russian, is expected to start from for them. They will be without... This is the most team newsy I've ever been. Without Fedor Kudryashov due to a calf problem. Barry, will Kudryashov's calf problem be a big problem for Russia?
I don't know, Max.
I don't know either.
I mean, the Russian, from the research I've done, Russia don't seem to be particularly well equipped for this competition. They were so stuck for a decent goalkeeper, they tried to get Igor Akinfeev out of retirement, but he wouldn't oblige. So he, I think the goalkeeper they have was sort of third in the pecking order. They had this guy who let in a Brazilian who got Russian citizenship, and he let in four in a Nations League match, in the first half of a Nations League match against Serbia. So he got hooked at half time and hasn't been seen since. They don't have any particularly decent wingers, and I think they're a bit light in midfield as well, so I wouldn't have particularly high hopes. But their manager, Stanislav Cherchesov, is always good for an entertaining quote, at least.
Belgium, Nicky, are coming. It's the golden generation still, just about. The last chance for the golden generation.
Yeah, I think you already mentioned Kevin De Bruyne's injury, and we don't know about Eden Hazard. I actually think Axel Witsel, who's looking like he could miss the entire tournament, certainly he's going to miss the start of it, is actually another quite sort of significant loss. When you look at the team sort of taking a step back and looking at what's there, you do think that that defence could be quite old. The midfield without Witsel looks a little bit... gives you some questions, at least. But then if you give me Dries Mertens and Romelu Lukaku coming off the season he's had, and potentially Hazard with them behind the attack, I think they're going to make short work of Russia. We'll see how they do later in the tournament, but I think they're going to be just fine tomorrow.
All right, and we'll find out on tomorrow's pod. Well, we'll find out during the games, I guess, and then we'll talk about it during tomorrow's pod.
Some people might find out, but tomorrow's pod, so they might miss the games.
Some people don't watch the games and only listen to us, but as yet, we haven't bought the exclusive rights to broadcast the coverage, although it would be a different sort of coverage. Considering we were watching this game on the Zoom together, and I spent half an hour complaining about someone else's commentary until I realised it was the commentary from my own telly going into the Zoom and then coming back out of the Zoom at me. I'd like to apologise to everybody on the screen. Right, that'll do for part two. Any other business in part three? Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Scotland have made a partial U-turn, decided to take the knee when they face England at Wembley next Friday, but will not make the anti-racism gesture before their other Group D games against the Czech Republic and Croatia at Hampden Park. Meanwhile, Keir Starmer's accused Boris Johnson. Keir Starmer, for listeners outside the UK who don't care about British politics, and why would you? He's the leader.
Or indeed, listeners inside the UK who don't care about British politics.
That's a good point. Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, has accused the Prime Minister Boris Johnson of a failure of leadership over his reluctance to condemn fans who boo England's players for taking the knee. As told the Prime Minister, he's undermined the team's chances of success at Euro 2020. He backed Gareth Southgate's open letter, Dear England, in which he made a sort of very patriotic case for a more inclusive country. A few of you have been writing to us about this subject. Sverre Thor, I hope I pronounced that correctly, says, I wanted to commend you and the others for keeping the discussion about racism alive. It's only when the good people go silent that the bad people have won. Keep up the good work. And while I agree with the sentiment expressed in Thursday's show that this is not about re-educating the 58-year-old man, I'd like to remind you that the drop hollows the stone. But yes, the most important task at hand is to give young people the tools to understand that racism, or even half-heartedly expressing racist opinions, is never acceptable. Looking forward to the Euros, being a lifelong fan of the English team, despite being an Icelander, living in Sweden, I sincerely hope that football will come home before the end of July. And John says maybe the England team should take the knee every time they score, which is something I wondered about, actually. I thought that would be quite an extraordinary message. We will see what happens, of course. We'll keep covering it, certainly as we expect it will happen on Sunday, but hopefully it won't. Barry?
Just one minor thing. I'm not going to beat the drum again, but that the Keir Starmer story is an exclusive in The Guardian by our own Jacob Steinberg, and I'm curious to know how Jacob has this direct line to the Labour leader. I didn't realise they were so close.
Did you... Isn't the idea that if you're a journalist, you have contacts and, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, he clearly spoke to Keir Starmer.
So that he has a contact. It surprises me, Barry, with the journalistic avarice that you have for stories that you didn't go out and get it yourself.
Well, I have a link to the President of Ireland, but not the Labour leader.
Okay.
In the UK.
I mean,
so if you want Michael D. Higgins's comments on the knee or anything else, I'm happy to get them for you.
I mean, I can text Anthony Costa from Blue. So
okay, fair enough.
Could you go from that link, Baz, to Bono to get a comment on the opening ceremony?
No, well, I would imagine Michael D and Bono are quite tight. I could certainly ask Darrow Breen what he, or Ruby Walsh, what they thought of the opening ceremony.
Martin says, after listening to the podcast the other day, I took your advice and caught up with the phenomenally theatrical CONCACAF League final between Mexico and the USA. Great fun all round. What struck me most was how much more natural the American commentators handled VAR. Clearly used to regular lengthy interruptions in sports. The commentators milked every passing minute for more drama and suspense and debated all possible outcomes as if reality rose and fell by them. This felt very different from the complaining on UK TV when the ref takes too long or no one knows what's happening. Is this maybe the solution to getting everyone on board with VAR, selling it as additional, utterly random spectacle rather than anything to do with the fairness or correct calls? VAR helped the CONCACAF ref make some pretty ridiculous decisions, but it only added to my enjoyment this time round. So yeah, that's from Martin.
By the way, am I the only person here that's noticed Ed has disappeared off our screen?
He disappeared at the end of part two.
Just in case the listeners are wondering why he's gone so quiet, he hasn't fallen asleep or passed out.
He disappeared,
drunk.
And I just thought we'd crack on and he'd come back. He's having Wi-Fi issues with his internet provider, but perhaps we shouldn't name them. Because they might probably sponsor the podcast in the next few weeks. I make a tricky read for you. Hi, Barry. Hello, Football Weekly fans. Max here. Barry's here too.
Hi, Max.
Did you know that Football Weekly is sponsored by random internet provider that we criticised mercilessly because we lost Ed Ahrens on the first Football Weekly Euros Weekly Daily podcast? Anyway.
As a matter of interest, Max, how many more of us would need to drop out for you to actually stop the
to
podcast?
Be honest,
or would you just soldier on alone?
I go to bed at 10 p.m. It is now 13 minutes to 11. Frankly, if no one was here, I'd just do some talking. I'd give it to the producer. And the producer Ian, as someone, Seb said, I'm genuinely interested. When will your producer go to sleep if you record this late and the show's out in the morning already? I feel for him and all of you, honestly. So, like, for producer Ian's sake, I would just carry on. It is not, by the way, Barry, a license for you to not turn up. Okay?
Never mind producer Ian. I haven't had a pint for nearly 24 hours.
Okay, let me do this. This is a message from Redacted. Hi, Football Weekly. On recent episodes, there's been chat of listeners inviting Barry to come to their weddings. I would also like to extend this offer to Barry and one other Football Weekly guest. My fiancé and I are eloping to a small venue in Pembrokeshire at the end of August, and as such will not be having any friends or family present. It would be a real honour to have him present for such an important day in our lives, and I'm sure he would enjoy the opportunity to leave Brixton and spend some time in the beautiful Welsh countryside. Better still, he could bring his super soaker to ensure that if any unwanted family members become aware of our plans, they can be sprayed and turned away before they get to the venue. Please do not read my name out, as I know friends of mine listen to the pod. If he is interested, do let me know. We'd also be happy to compensate with a crate of beer for his choosing. Now, Barry, I think you and I, well, you can, you know, it's, I'm not invited, it's you and one other. You can take who you want, but we should absolutely go and witness this man's wedding.
When is it?
The end of August.
Yeah, I'd be up for it. I mean, I usually don't like going to weddings of even people I do know, so I'm not sure about going to a wedding of people I don't know, but I would love to see more of the Welsh countryside.
Thing is, if we don't like them, or like they're psychopaths, we just witness it and then go off on our own. And if they're lovely, what a fun day that is. So look, if you not...
Are we expected to hang around after the nuptials?
Could you send a new email, footballweekly@theguardian.com, with a bit more information, you know, where
will we be
when?
Getting fed and watered?
And I don't want to be
measured
up...
Will you pay our travel expenses?
Yeah. I don't want to be measured up for a suit. I'm not interested. I don't want to go to Moss Bros. Unless, of course, they sponsor the pod. Hi! Can we finish on this? which is a singer-songwriter called Liam McClare, who happens to be the son of Brian McClare, made a loop. Is it called a loop, Barry?
Yes.
It's called a loop. Anyway, he sampled Football Weekly and made it into some popular music. I don't know if this is future bass like Martin Garrix, but anyway, we enjoyed it. Because we were in it, mate, but also because it sounded quite good. He looked like he knew what he was doing. So thank you to Liam McClare. If you want to sample any more Football Weekly, we will happily play it out through the Euros. I don't think we're offering payment at this stage. But
do you think Liam will mind the fact that you mentioned he's the son of the former Celtic and Manchester United legend Brian? Because you know how it's so unfair to compare young footballers to their older, more successful dads. I'm not saying Liam isn't successful, but you know this could be a very unfair comparison, Max.
It's a good point. I would suggest he's doing something different. If, of course, Brian McClare would like to send us a loop that he has made.
Well, Brian McClare is famously a man of impeccable musical taste, so that's probably where Liam got his talent from.
The offer is open. The gauntlet is laid to Brian, or actually any Manchester United player from the 90s, to make some music for us. But
come on, Jim Leighton.
I want some reggae from Clayton Blackmore, and I'm not stopping until we get some, frankly. I want Arthur Olbiston doing scat. But we don't have that at the moment. We have Liam McClare, and go and check him out. Check out his sort of his other stuff as well, please. This is his sample, and we'll play out with that. So Nikki, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Barry, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
We leave you with Liam McClare sampling Football Weekly, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Harry,
I don't know if you
thank
noticed.
God for that sport. Yeah. The handsome, chiseled, for me, Clive.
Harry, I don't know if you
thank
noticed.
God for that sport. Yeah. The handsome, chiseled face. For me, Clive.
Harry, I don't know if you thank noticed. Harry, I don't know if you thank noticed. Harry, I don't know if you
thank
noticed.
Harry, I don't know if
you noticed. Harry, I don't know if you
thank
noticed.
God for that sport. Yeah. The handsome, chiseled face. For me, Clive.
Harry, I don't know if you
thank
noticed.
God for that sport. Yeah. The handsome, chiseled face. For me, Clive.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.